Words on Water.
Hi, welcome to Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. This is the host, Travis Loop, and for this episode, we are joined by new WEF President Tom Kunitz. Tom is the Assistant Director of Monitoring and Research for the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District of Greater Chicago, leading the district's efforts on key strategic engineering initiatives. Has over 30 years of experience in the field of environmental engineering in both the public and private sectors, focusing on design of wastewater treatment facilities, improving the water environment, and protection of public health. Tom, how are you doing?
Hi, Travis. Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, glad to chat. This will be fun. So you are the new president of the WEF Board of Trustees for the coming year. How does that feel?
I'm really, really excited about this. The great thing about WEF is wherever I go, the members, the people that I work with, such great people, top quality people. And so I have the opportunity to be going around the country to our member associations, to various events and conferences. And so I'm so excited to have that kind of opportunity and to meet and to continue to work with our members. One of the great things about WEF members is that they're volunteers and they bring this incredible passion to the work, their passion for water, their passion for their communities. And the WEF volunteers, by and large, these are going to be the same people that you find out in the community who are volunteering for being coaches on the baseball team, or they're volunteering for reading in the library, or whatever it is. It's that same kind of desire to look out for and care for others that really is that same kind of drive that connects them in WEF. So I'm very excited about that. I'm also very humbled in the sense that I'm working with some real, you know, giants in the industry, giants in the world. Because when you talk about water, there isn't anything in this world, right, that isn't somehow connected to water.
Sure.
So it's not just some sort of like, well, this is a little niche here. So, you know, you're a big fish in a small pond. No. These are big fish, big ponds.
Yeah.
And the people on the board, if I can talk about the Board of Trustees, these are also some outstanding, excellent people from various backgrounds. We have academics and from industry and consulting and utilities. And to have the ability to share high-level thinking, ideas with these trustees, talking about the vision of where are we going in the industry? What's going to happen 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 30 years from now? And getting the industry prepared to deal with these changes. It's daunting, it's challenging, and that's what makes it so exciting to be part of it.
Water professionals have this incredible passion for their work, and so it's great. I can see being part of that and being caught up in that energy and how contagious that is. So what are some of your priorities? What's kind of going to be your focus as WEF president for the next year?
Well, Travis, we have a strategic plan. And in fact, about every 4 to 5 years, we look at the strategic goals and make sure that they are the current goals. It's the right goals for the next 4 to 5 years, because that's, you know, our goals are something that we want to be able to accomplish in nice little chunks.
Mm-hmm.
So we've just approved new strategic goals for the next 4 to 5 years. So as president of the Board of Trustees, my job is to continue to support those goals. And to give the organization what it needs so we can accomplish those goals, and to work with WEF staff and seeing what we need to do. Now, some of the goals in there are of personal interest to me. We have resource recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And we've always talked about really driving in the industry to increase the amount of resource recovery that we're doing at our water reclamation plants. So that's a big one for me. Also, the workforce, the water workforce of the future. We even have a strategic goal about developing a diverse and talented workforce.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to be facing challenges coming into the future that we have enough talented people, and we have enough people that are going to be working to design, maintain, manage, operate these water resource recovery facilities. So WEF is perfectly positioned to be that organization that can provide First of all, we can provide that inboarding, that first attraction to the industry for new career people and for young people coming out into the workforce. And second, we are there perfectly positioned to provide the training for the workforce. We have the knowledge exchange, and we have, very important, we create connections. We create connections between people. And that networking, the connections, really drives development in a person for their career, for their professional growth, personal growth. And this is why WEF is going to be such a leader in helping to develop that workforce of the future. One of the ways that we can look for that next group of talented people is to look into some areas that we hadn't touched yet or are underserved or underrepresented. Mm-hmm. So we are going to be making a focus this year on looking into underrepresented groups. We're talking about women who are not in the workforce in the same numbers that they are in the workforce in general in this country. We're talking about people of color, Latinos, African-Americans, groups of veterans, groups that may be really underrepresented in the water sector, but can bring very valuable perspectives and experience to the water sector. So we're going to be making some real intentional efforts to making contact and reach out to them. If I could talk about one, program that we just created, I'm very excited about this. So here at WEF Tech, we have a new program called WEF Inflow. Okay? Inflow stands for Introducing Future Leaders to Opportunities in Water. INFLOW.
A good acronym there. I like it.
Yes. So it ties into the water thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And they're flowing into the industry.
Yeah.
So the goal and the objective of Inflow is to attract people of color from underrepresented groups that are in school and universities, colleges, and so on, maybe having some interest in something related to the water field, but maybe we're never even aware that there are jobs in the water industry. Mm-hmm. So we're not just going to open the door and say, hey, come in and investigate. We're going to reach out and we're going to grab these folks and say, come to WEF Tech. And we're going to, WEF and sponsors are going to cover the cost of registration, cover the cost of lodging and transportation so that there's no barriers.
Yeah.
And then have a wonderful program lined up so that they can see the things that are going on in our industry. We have 16 youngsters, all very excited, coming in from Howard University in Washington, D.C., Tuskegee University in Alabama, and the University of South Florida. And they're coming in, and we have a great program. They're going to see the operations challenge. They're going to see technical sessions, the student design competition. We even set up for them a special program, a panel discussions, where we have prominent African-American leaders from the water industry who will be having a very personal conversation with these students to talk to them about things like, what is it like to work in the water sector? Or maybe some of the challenges they faced in getting there, and giving them some good advice. And one of the best things is these students are going to be given the opportunity to have one-on-one meetings with prospective employers.
Oh, wow.
And that's so important. The WEF Inflow program is about getting them to understand that there are opportunities in water, that they are real, they are exciting, and they are accessible.
You know, I can imagine also then by having this experience, those students are going to become ambassadors for the water sector themselves, right? They're going to be telling their family and friends about water careers and opportunities. So there'll be a ripple effect from something like this.
Absolutely. Imagine when you leave WEF Tech, you're so excited about everything you saw, and you go tell your family and friends about it. They'll do the same things with their fellow students back in the universities, tell their family, friends, and it's going to spread the word.
Yeah. One of the areas you mentioned, and I knew this is an area of interest for you, is resource recovery. So, and that's reusing water, that's getting nutrients out of water, that's generating energy. We are very excited at WEF Tech to be announcing kind of the first ever baseline data on resource recovery by U.S. facilities, calling it the Renew Water Project. Why are you excited about that? What's that about? What's the purpose? What is that going to do for the water sector?
Thanks, Travis, for bringing that up, because this is very important for the water sector. We've talked about this at WEF for maybe the last decade. We've even changed the way we talk about water. Instead of saying wastewater, now we're saying used water or opportunity water, to recognize that water is not a waste product. Okay, so we're changing the attitude. So we need to make some really bold changes. In other words, really move the needle on resource recovery so it's no longer a headline story. Mm-hmm. We want to get it out of the headlines because it becomes so common and so everyday, right, that it's no longer something to make a big celebration about. So how do we do that? How do we get to that point? Well, you know the old management saying, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. Mm-hmm. So we need to measure what is resource recovery. And in a sense, it's been going on for a little bit in the industry, and folks talking about, oh, well, we're doing water reuse, or we're creating energy here, we're energy neutral, and so on. So there's different ways of talking about it, but you cannot compare apples to apples. You can't compare one utility to another utility. So the goal here is to get us to all be working on the same standard. So we worked here for the last about year and a half. A task force came together and said, we're going to look at resources and create a definition for identifying what are the resources, how are we going to measure them, so everybody works on the same way. And then once we set that, now we can do goals. And we're looking at the four major resources, not that there aren't other, but for now we're going to start with four, and that is phosphorus, nitrogen, carbon, and the water itself. And the idea is to look at this from a mass balance basis. That means that what comes into the treatment plant, okay, that's coming in, that's potential. Mm-hmm. How much water comes into a treatment plant? How much phosphorus comes into a treatment plant, for example? And then we'll look at how much of those constituents are actually reused, beneficially reused or recovered. And now you take the ratio and that's your percent recovery. Theoretically, of course, we would love to be 100% recovery.
Right.
But that's not going to be possible because, for example, nitrogen changes form and so on. But from that, we now can say that every treatment plant uses the same definition of percent recovery. And if they're on the same same standard, we can now start comparing one utility to another. The reason that that is important is we need to be able to benchmark where are we today, and a utility needs to benchmark itself versus other utilities in the industry. Once you have a benchmark, now we can start setting goals. Where do we want to be in 5 years, 10 years, 30 years? We're likening the goals that we're going to be setting here to the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, in that we're setting bold goals on the order of cut in half or double the amount, for example, the resource that is recovered. So by having this program that establishes the metrics and the definitions, everybody in the country, Canada, and others in the world can adopt this, will now be able to see how they stand to somebody else. And we at WEF can put out a report card, if you will, maybe every year, every other year, and say, here's where we are in the country. Here's where we need to be. This rallies the industry and the public around the resource recovery, which means then the public can say, yes, we want to push more of our resources towards doing this because we see progress. We see the value.
I mean, as a communications person for WEF, I see the value in this storytelling that can come out of this, and just it's incredible. It's exciting. You've got numbers and you can put it out there for folks. I know your utility there in Chicago is really a great leading utility on resource recovery and is doing some amazing things. And that's part of where your enthusiasm and interest comes and expertise. What's going on in Chicago?
Well, that's true. And I love working in the Chicago utility and Metropolitan Water Reclamation District because we are always thinking about the future, thinking about how we are serving the community. And resource recovery is actually something we've been doing for quite some time without having the word resource recovery, right? Just knowing this was something important to do. For example, for decades, we've been taking the biogas or the gas produced in our anaerobic digesters and using it as fuel in boilers. And we use those boilers to produce hot water or steam, which is used to heat the anaerobic digesters and used to heat our facilities. And so we've been using this and as a free fuel source. But at the same time, it is reducing the amount of natural gas that we need to purchase. So if we can use a renewable gas in lieu of a natural gas, okay, we're offsetting the need to use a fossil fuel.
Double benefit there.
Double benefit, yeah. Reducing the amount of greenhouse gases that are being produced and so on. So right there is one of the things that we're doing. Another thing that we've been big on is biosolids for quite some time. And to us, the biosolids is such an important resource. We do a lot of our work on land application for agriculture use. We have a goal of 100% beneficial reuse of biosolids. And in fact, we have a staff of PhD soil scientists. Huh. And many utilities don't have soil scientists on staff. But we have that because we recognize how important biosolids are as a resource, because we are putting nutrients back into the land. We're creating that circular economy, taking the nitrogen, the phosphorus, the carbon, and putting it back. And the reason biosolids are so great, and we know this because our soil scientists have studied this. In fact, the work that they've done helped create the 503 biosolids regs, because, you know, the science wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
We determined that biosolids, it's better than commercial fertilizers. First of all, you don't need the industry creating that and the machinery and so on. It creates the macronutrients, the phosphorus, the nitrogen, carbon, but also creates micronutrients that you don't get in commercial fertilizers. It also, folks don't think about this, it provides organic matter. And the organic matter is important because you have the bacteria in the soil, and the bacteria in the soil are very important to create healthy soil. And so you don't get this from commercial fertilizers.
Right.
So when we be putting the biosolids for land application, we are really returning nutrients to the soil and creating a better product than commercial fertilizer, than even topsoil.
Yeah.
And so lately we've been now even taking wood chips from the city, when the city of Chicago goes in there and trims the trees and so on, and doing compost with that, creating a compost with the wood chips and with the biosolids, and creating a product now that has structure. It's even better than topsoil. Using this now in and around the Chicago area, in the parks, and for land reclamation and so on. So this is really driving this idea of resource recovery, that the wood chips now combined with the biosolids.
Yeah.
We have one more, I think, that pretty important and well-known resource recovery, and that is phosphorus recovery.
Mm.
We now have the largest phosphorus recovery plant, at a wastewater treatment plant in the world.
In the world. We'll just say that again.
And so we cover the ability to recover and create up to 10,000 tons per year of struvite. And struvite is ammonia, phosphate, crystal, and is a slow-release fertilizer. And so the phosphorus, instead of winding up removed from the water by, say, some chemical process where it combines with the phosphorus and it's lost forever, we now are recovering it, turning into a fertilizer, and it's perfect for things like horticulture and nurseries and so on, or it could be blended with other nutrients to create other fertilizers. And so in this case, we are taking a resource that's non-renewable, because phosphorus comes from mined rock.
Yeah.
And once it's gone, it's gone. And we are keeping it from going into the waterway, where it gets dissolved and becomes diluted and is completely unrecoverable. And we're pulling it out and putting it back into the economic cycle.
Yeah. I know that the world's not in a phosphorus crisis yet, but I know, like you said, there's limited supplies, and people are starting to say, hey, wait a minute, we gotta watch this, because that's something we need to have.
Yeah, actually, Travis, there's some folks out there, some geologists, who are estimating we may have already hit peak production of phosphorus.
Wow.
You know, and that we may be starting to go on the downside.
Huh. Interesting. One other thing about Chicago, and I just kind of picked up on this just as I watched the water news, and that's the Chicago River. It's kind of an iconic waterway, and I know that its health has really improved, and there's been some stories about that recently. How has that happened, and what does that mean for the city?
Well, the city of Chicago is – the story of the city of Chicago and its whole history is about water, right? It was founded on the Chicago River, because that was a little port area where boats could come in and dock. And the Chicago River ultimately then was connected via a canal to the Illinois River for commerce and moving goods from the Great Lakes to the Mississippi River and back.
Mm-hmm.
So water has been such a big part of Chicago's history. As you know, early on in the development of the city, we weren't thinking about, and the folks back then weren't really thinking about sanitation. And so the rivers became polluted. And, of course, that caused health problems, and it was really public health that drove the formation of my agency, which was called the Chicago Sanitary District, and now Metropolitan Water Reclamation District in Greater Chicago. So to drive the development of that organization to go in there and clean up the waterways because of public health. So public health now is improved. We don't have cholera. Things are going great, except that the river itself is not really a pleasant place to go. And we're recognizing that for the health of the city, for the quality of life, you know, water and waterways and recreation and our connection to water is so much a part of who we are as human beings. And it's so part of our intuitive connection to nature. So it goes, the story goes back almost into the 1960s, where planning was being done to say, well, we have these combined sewer overflows. Chicago being an old city, we have combined sewers where stormwater and domestic wastewater are combined. And when the rains would come and it would inundate the system, we get overflows into the river. And so this is basically raw sewage combined with a lot of rainwater going in there. And folks back then in the 1960s saying, we can't do this. So they studied maybe over 50 different ways to deal with that. And the answer they came up with is this deep tunnel system that we have. And the idea is we're going to combine this overflow into a deep tunnel system, store it, and then when the storm passes, now we can treat it. And incidentally, the Board of Commissioners passed the authorization to begin work on this system just 8 days after the Clean Water Act was approved by Congress.
I never knew that. Very interesting. Yeah.
So 8 days later, we're already there moving, to start cleaning the water. So we have today the system, we call it the TARP system, Tunnel and Reservoir Plan. And it collects a lot of this combined sewage that otherwise would be going into the waterways, either in a deep tunnel or in giant reservoirs that we have created by mining into the ground. And now we have the goal is to get up to 10 billion gallons of storage. And already these reservoirs have been capturing major storms, holding the water, and then we can treat it before it goes back into the waterway. So this now is a long history to get up to your question about the Chicago River. It's recognizing the value of the river to the city. And today you will see so many visitors coming to the city, and they're attracted by the river. They walk along the river. We have a gorgeous river walk now where you can get down close to river edge. And you can walk from the Lake Michigan all the way inland, and pretty soon there'll be a bridge connecting it across the Chicago River and connecting to a trail, a rails-to-trail that we have called the 606 Line, which is an elevated railway.
Okay.
Abandoned railway turned into a walking and bicycle path.
Kind of like the High Line in
New
York City.
Like the High Line in New York City. We call it the 606 after our zip code, which is all 606, whatever. So now the people's connection to water is so much closer and personal. You can walk from Lake Michigan all the way inland. And people are on the rivers, too, with boating. Chicago's a big boating area. Kayaking. We have a sightseeing boats. And all of this is permissible because the water is now clean. And we have boats that go and pick up any floatables and trash that may flutter into the water. And it makes it something that people are now attracted to. And that is why I talk about the health of the city, because of the power of the water, the power of the water that connects us and attracts us and gets people outside. And that's all tied into city health.
I know that one of the architectural cruises you can take on that river where they tell you everything about the buildings. That was always one of the coolest experiences I've had. That's fascinating. I always recommend people to get on that river when they go to Chicago and see the city from that vantage point. It's so unique.
It is. And if you think about the architecture of the city and you see some of the new buildings, the old buildings, and the older buildings were metaphorically turning their back on the river. They were built such that the side facing away from the river was the most impressive. And now you see that the change is happening is that the architecture is enhancing and embracing the river because the river is now cleaner and the river is now attracting people. And so it's manifested in the architecture.
Last question is a Chicago question or topic here, and it's shifting gears a little bit. So you kind of on the side here, we'll say, you've been involved in comedy for a long time and in writing and improv, including being involved with Second City, the iconic spot there in Chicago. So talk about that. Yeah, you've been doing it for a while. You love it. It's fun. Comedy's supposed to be fun. that's the whole point.
Yeah.
But yeah, what do you get out of that? Why do you enjoy that so much?
Well, it's something that I've always had, even as a young boy. I love making people laugh. I like telling jokes, My mother used to always joke that I had a Rolodex of jokes in my head, wow. And you just say a subject and I would have a joke for you on that. So it was something that I loved. And as I got into college, I found some outlets for that. I ended up as a editor of a campus humor magazine. So okay. I was doing some comedy writing and so on.
Where was that?
And this was at Penn State University.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So the magazine was called the Penn State Froth, which was the second oldest campus humor magazine in the country next to the Harvard Lampoon.
Okay.
So I did some writing for that and thought about going into writing, theater, you know, as a field. And then I thought, well, maybe I want to feed myself. So I ended up in engineering. And yeah. I know that the two of them are not exactly connected.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, do you feel like those are different sides of the brain? Or how does that work for you then? Engineering, comedy,
yeah.
Right?
So they are to some degree, but they are not. And engineering, and oftentimes you'll hear engineers say, oh, I can't do comedy. I can't do theater because I'm not creative. My goodness, engineers are very creative people, right? Yeah. Engineers are, at the essence, problem solvers. And how do you solve problems but being creative, taking known information and applying it in a new way? That is creativity.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not, you know, slapstick funny, but it is creative. And so there are some commonalities to it. Now, I will admit that some of the things are not common. There is very left brain, right brain things at work here. And yeah. sometimes you need to use one brain side of the brain or the other to going whatever you're after. But once I moved to Chicago, I had the opportunity there once I'm in Chicago to take some classes at the Second City,
yeah.
which is, a popular theater, comedy theater that's put out a lot of people in, you know,
so
in the
many.
Industry.
Yeah.
So many names. And I saw some of them there, you know, when I was a younger student there. So I trained there and then after a while started performing with the troupe, did a lot of performing in Chicago, and ultimately was hired as a teacher. And as I was teaching these improvisation techniques to the students, I was really recognizing how improvisation and the skills there are really life skills. And whereas we're teaching it for the purpose of the stage, that I'm secretly teaching the students life skills because many of them, you know, are not going to end up on the stage or film or television,
sure.
but they can leave the class with life skills.
What kind of life skills do you think?
Things like listening. That's a very important part of communication, right? Is listening. And folks think improvisation is just saying the first thing that comes up to the top of your mind. It's not. It's actually very a lot of training to think about the best choice to say, considering what's going on in the moment. And to do that, you have to listen and concentrate on what's happening, which means listening to somebody else instead of your own thoughts. So that leads to being a good partner, a good collaborator. And that also helps with creativity because you're not just floundering for some idea, but you are building. You're building on somebody else's thoughts and ideas. That's collaboration, and that's what helps spur creativity.
Huh.
And so as I'm teaching this, I'm also realizing these are skills that we could teach people in the workplace. So I started teaching workshops in workshops like Improvisation for Life, Improvisation in the Workplace. At WEFTEC, I've taught workshops for 2 years. Since I've gotten involved in the Board of Trustees, it's much harder to find the time, but I hope to get back to that. I've given some workshops at some of our member associations, to YP groups, and it's all about taking these skills and how you can apply them, not for the stage, but to enhance your work and your workplace, enhance collaboration, enhance understanding the value of being a good partner, enhance understanding how to listen, and building creative thoughts.
Yeah, very interesting. Maybe we need a little bit more humor and comedy in the water sector. Maybe we could have some more fun with this big, serious work we're doing, right?
Well, I think maybe a first step towards that, Travis, is I'm going to get you to come and take one of my classes.
I would love to.
And then
I would. Totally.
You could be the prophet that goes out and spreads the word.
There we go. Tom, great conversation. I appreciate it. Congratulations on becoming president of WEF, and it looks like it's going to be a fun year ahead.
Thanks, Travis.
Words on Water.